sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store. Excuse me, 2 weeks in a row?
2 weeks in a row. It's kind of like we are profesh.
Like, we're making a podcast here, baby.
It's almost like we're actually back. We are back.
We didn't lie and release one episode and then go away forever.
Do you hear that?
I do. That's the podcast time.
Yes, it's time.
It's time to record a podcast.
Yes, we were just stalling.
Yeah, exactly. Now we had to wait till podcast time. We had to wait for that alarm to go off so that we knew it was podcast time. How are you? How are you, Ned?
I am Neo. I'm a little sleepy deepy this morning.
Oh, dude, same. I'm also sleep deep.
It's a nice contrast from the energy we brought last week, I feel.
Yeah, we were insane and hyperactive last week, so this week we're bringing it down a little bit.
Yeah, we're bringing you NPR.
I was literally like, we're going full NPR on you. Can I tell you something that's really exciting about this episode of Desperate Housewives?
Yeah.
It is the 69th episode of Desperate Housewives.
I'm not prepared. I need to take my shirt off. I need to get wet.
We need to get our nice tattoos. Happy 69th episode of Desperate Housewives, everybody. Yay. Made it 69 episodes. We are inching dangerously close to 100 episodes. I feel like that's pretty fun. But 69 feels more important because it's 69. So
69 feels definitely important.
Yeah, I needed to share that because I saw that as I was filling in some info and was like, holy shit, 69 epis.
I wish this episode was just a nonstop orgy.
I also wish there was more 69ing in the 69th episode. Absolutely.
We'll have to fix that.
Yeah, we'll have to write some letters. We'll have to get them to edit some 69ing in. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure if all of us write in droves to ABC headquarters.
Yes. I mean, hey, you know, Women Who Kill just got canceled. Mark Cherry's got free time. I think I said that last week. Yeah. He can edit some shit into this episode.
You're right.
Every week I will remind everyone that Mark Cherry's new show has gotten canceled. I'll just rub it in his face until he releases more Desperate Housewives.
Or he comes on this show.
Mark Cherry, come on this podcast.
So we can bully you in person.
Can you imagine how cool it would be if we got to talk to anybody? Have we ever talked about the time I tried to email somebody to be on this show and their agents? It was back in the House Dykes days.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace.
The agents of said person did not realize that when they like went away from the thread we were in and pulled us back into the thread that we could see the thread of emails they had sent each other privately. And they said, like, eek at our name. And I think that is very funny. Maybe since we're with Siri Gaze now, it's like we have a mustache on. So maybe we approach again with our mustache and we're like, yeah, we're totally a different podcast. Will this person come on now?
I think we definitely should.
We totally should. It's our duty as podcasters to get famous people to talk to us for your ears. For all of your joy. But you know what we should do? We should do our podcast. And we're talking about season 3, episode 22. We are in the penultimate episode. Next week is the finale of season 3, the oft-mentioned, very hyped-up finale. But for today, we are talking about the lead-up to the finale with episode 22. This episode premiered May 13th, 2007. It was written by Bob Daly and directed by Larry Shaw. And for hashtag Sondheim Watch, this episode is called What Would We Do Without You? And it's a song from the musical Company. And as I mentioned, this is the 69th episode of Desperate Housewives. Happy 69th episode. And those are my top of show facts, because Wisteria International once again is discontinued. I apologize, everyone.
Exactly 1 year had passed since Susan Meyer was flung into space. I guess not space. There's a couple years have passed since then.
If anything, Mike was flung into space and he was hit by a car.
Yeah, I'm shocked. They're wearing their outfits from when they went on their dinner date from season one.
Absolutely, very similar. Yeah, yeah. Susan's in a shiny shindig. Mike is rocking those like light wash jeans and a blazer. I love how straight dudes decided that was like the epitome of like. Formal wear was like a jean, like a nice fit jean with a blazer.
It's formal and casual. I loved them going out to dinner. This is truly just a series of Susan thinking Mike is going to propose to her throughout the night. And it just kind of never happens while they're at dinner. At one point, the violinist is playing the Desperate Housewives theme song behind her. Did you catch that?
Is that what they're playing?
Yeah.
That is so good. That's why he tipped him like $100.
Yes.
Mike pulled a wad of cash out of his pocket and was like, I love that show. Thanks. I did not catch that was what they were playing. Wow. I was listening. Yeah. I was taking notes and listening to Mary Alice. I totally didn't clock that. That's so funny.
It was ridiculous.
Can I say, Mike was like peak for me in this episode. This is like peak Mike. He's hot boy. He's insanely hot boy this episode. Him with that open shirt at the breakfast table. Excuse me. And then he was just like chill, calm, supportive, sexy husband the whole episode. I'm obsessed with Mike in this episode. So I just want to lay that out here right now because he's so cute in this scene. He's just like so handsome and calm and cool this whole episode.
Yeah, I honestly, I really loved him. I think that's just kind of who he is generally. Yeah. And I think because of everything that's been going on and everything that's happened, we just haven't been able to see it yet.
I agree.
And I think everything that has led up to this has also made him realize, like, oh, he says it in this episode, I just want to be with this woman.
It's so good. I love how I agree that this is just who he is and we don't get to see it often. And I think he's a great foil to the silliness and the insanity of Susan in a way that I think is on like full display in this episode of like how good they can be for each other because of their personalities. Mm-hmm. I really loved this episode in terms of Susan and Mike. It was a really good Susan and Mike episode for me. And this is cute. I love that they're in the car and she's mad at him for not proposing. And literally as I was writing it, Mike said it, where I was like, why would you want to commemorate the day he was hit by a fucking car and put into a coma? And then he is also like, why would I want to commemorate the night I was hit by a car and put into a coma? And I just thought it was funny. But then I could see that little smug look on his face and I could tell something was up.
Oh, yeah,
I could
definitely.
As someone who's been proposed to, I've seen that look before, that like I'm about to do this thing. And you don't know, kinda.
Yeah.
So I was like, I know that smug look. This motherfucker's about to propose.
And yeah, like as Susan is talking about how she wanted to take like that horrible moment and turn it into something beautiful, full circle, they come to the trailer that Susan was making all pretty a year ago. Before he got hit by that car, and it looks exactly like she had it, which is, how did he know? Did she tell? Oh, she probably told him.
Maybe you're right. That is a weird plot hole, but yeah, she might have told him. Maybe, or maybe Julie helped, because Julie helped set up the. Remember how Julie helped Susan set up the other one? Maybe Mike was like, "Hey, what did it look like?" And Julie was like, "I got you." Because if he was at dinner, Julie's probably the one who set it up, honestly.
Yeah.
Because he probably pay Andrea Bowen and let her be in the episode one. But yeah, my assumption is that Julie probably set it up while they were at dinner, because presuming they had to leave and it was not there, right? So I guess that's probably what Julie was doing.
Okay, Julie, here's the keys to my truck. You're just going to want to back the trailer in. And then yeah, literally. This is how you unhook it from the hatch.
Julie, like, I just want a whole episode that's just like probably 3 hours of dinner where Julie was trying to get this thing set up by herself.
That is an episode in itself. Yeah, that's just a series of hijinks.
Hijinks. Where's my queen? I miss Julie.
But yes, they come to this trailer, and Susan looks at Mike, and he goes, I wanted to take a bad memory and turn it into something beautiful, I guess.
And she proposes.
She does.
I thought this was cute. I thought this was cute.
I thought it was sweet. It's just like, it was so sweet. She's so excited, and even Mary Alice is like, She doesn't even let him get the chance because she's been waiting for this so long. She just doesn't want to anymore. So she just blurts it out. And I think that is Susan Meyer. I think that's a perfect example of who she is as a person, you know?
I was so cute. I also thought when he was like, get out and go over there. I'll be on time this time or whatever. I'll show up this time. One, I loved that line where he was like, I promise I'll show up. What if he gets out of his truck and he gets hit by a car, like, in the middle of the street, like, 20 feet away from her? I did have that thought, which is probably a dark thought.
It's Orson and Brie coming back from their honeymoon.
And Orson hits him again, and he's like, oh, my God. That would have, I mean, I know that, obviously, they didn't do that, but how funny would that have fucking been?
That would have been really funny.
He just gets, well, what if he gets hit by a car again, but he gets up this time, he's like, I'm okay. What
and then he has to get hit by another one, because comedy comes in threes, MJ.
You're right. They got to keep hitting with the car. How many times will Mike get hit by a car in this whole series? Prediction corner.
It's 3, 5, and then it just keeps going up from there.
I need this man to be hit by a car every day of the week.
Please. Well, no, I had a sad thought. I don't want to say it out loud.
Don't say it. Don't speak it into existence, because we're moving on past the opening credits bumper, because we will literally never see the opening credits again, which makes me so sad. And Mary Alice comes in with a monologue about the fact that from the moment we wake up in the morning until our head hits the pillow at night, our lives are filled with questions. And it's a monologue of Tom asking Lynette, like, a bazillion questions. Why is Tom in the muscle tee you? Why is that you? I immediately thought of you with him in that black muscle tee being like, can I pull this off? And I was like, that's literally Ned.
I'm in a black tank top right now. Can I pull this off?
I remember when you, not that you're not in it anymore, but you went through like a hardcore muscle tee phase.
And oh, I'm still in one.
Yeah, so you look incredible. You rock a muscle tee, and it made me think of you immediately.
I love muscle tees. Hell yeah. I mean, Tom great. In this episode is really annoying, but thank you.
He's scruffy Tom, but he is annoying Tom. Yeah. And
it's kind of like it neutralizes each other.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. Until he is nothing. But some questions are so dangerous. The truth is not an option. And this was fucking stupid. Tom, like, picking a fight with his wife in front of their children is completely inappropriate.
Yes.
Completely. Like, shut the fuck up. Talk to your wife privately, like an adult man.
And, like, just Parker fucking getting in on it.
Parker's like, sorry I fucking asked. Parker, Jesus.
Parker was just like, are you mad, Daddy? And then she's just like, what the fuck do you mean, you little bitch?
Parker just, like, literally was like, hi, Mommy. What's wrong? And then just things went downhill because his dad's a fucking idiot. I don't know. I just thought it was, like, super inappropriate for Tom to be like, well, Mommy doesn't talk to me at work anymore. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, dude.
Like, you are having an issue in a relationship. Don't, like, pick this fight in front of your children.
It's just stupid. It's petty.
I mean, we do find out through this, though, that they have not really talked in 5 days or really interacted with each other in 5 days, which is a long time to not talk or interact with your partner. Your spouse.
Yeah. Oh, buddy. I mean, things are bad and we get into it, but not yet, because we cut to Susan's house. Mike, as I said, with his little open shirt in the breakfast nook, looking like sexy honeymoon vibes, was living. Susan is calling vendors to try to get the wedding back on track because her and Ian already had a date and a bunch of stuff already planned. And like, she's like, is it okay that I'm reusing my wedding, basically, because she's calling all these vendors being like, yeah, everything's the same but the groom, long story. Everything's the same but the groom, long story. And Mike just doesn't give a shit. He's like, yeah, I'm here to marry you. I don't care what the wedding looks like, because he's the best guy alive. That's kind of it. And then she realizes, oh my gosh, she needs to reinvite the guests as well. So she's starting to get back on track with reinviting guests to her wedding. And that's sort of that scene.
I really thought that, like, her reutilizing all of these connects from Ian was going to, like, have Ian be like, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you reusing our wedding?
They got different plans. They got different plans.
We cut to Victor and Gabby, I believe, and they are also talking about their wedding coming up. A nice little contrast, or not really, a nice little similar scene. And Victor is talking about how, like, his cleaning lady has a daughter who looks exactly like Gabby did when she was young, so that for the processional, she can come out as the flower girl and it could be like when she was a child up to the woman she is now.
Can you imagine if you're just like, this is just your job to clean this man's house? And he's like, hi, can I borrow your child for my wedding? Feels a little weird.
Yeah. Jesus.
Because surely they, you know, flower children, flower girls are generally people in your family, like people that like you are close to, you know, people that are related to you in some way, or children that are a part of your extended family. It feels a little weird to just find a child that looks attractive. I don't know. Just very weird. But also Gabby being like, you're a hot groom and a gay best friend rolled into one, because he has general interest in their wedding. Like, I don't, where did it happen in the history of weddings that it's like men should never be interested in their wedding? This is all like, I get that, like, you know what, straight people are wild, and I get that it's like the bridezilla plans the wedding and the groom's just gotta show up and stand there, but like, why is that the thing? Why can't men give a shit about their wedding too?
Because it's emasculating to care and to love.
It's emasculating to plan something on a piece of paper.
It is. If you give a guy a pen, a paper, mm-mm.
No. If you give a man a binder that has pictures of weddings in it, mm-mm. No. So that's just some straight people nonsense. I just wanted to call out.
Yeah. And then after that, we cut to Edie being hungover. Mike comes in and he says he's just stopping by to pick up a couple things to take over to Susan's. And I forget, one of them makes a comment about like, oh, why don't you two just get married already?
Yeah, Mike is like, there's a lot of wedding fever. You two might catch it. And then Carlos goes, yeah, right, buddy. And like laughs his ass off. And Edie is obviously offended.
Yeah.
Because it's your girlfriend.
Yeah. The minute Mike goes upstairs, she's just like, hello.
That was fucking rude. Which, you know, I agree, it was kind of rude. But also, I agree with him that they're pretty new into the relationship. Like, another thing of, like, I feel like this is less a thing now, but I feel like when I was growing up, there was always these, like, narratives of traditionally straight people being like, oh, we've been together for 6 months, it's time to start thinking about marriage. Or we've been together for a year, why hasn't he proposed yet? And I'm like, a year? Like, 6 months? A year? That's nothing.
Yeah.
That's, you barely know somebody at that point, which I know sounds wild, but it takes years to, like, truly, truly know somebody and truly, truly know if, like, you're compatible in the sense of, like, wedding this person. And this seems to be from the time period in which, like, oh, I've known them for a couple months, perfect, let's get married. And so I think Carlos is ahead of his time, and I agree with him that, like, they don't need to be worrying about weddings when they're only a couple months into this, half a year maybe.
Yeah. And they're still young, you know.
They are, yeah.
It's not like they're 90.
Well, Edie says she's 40 in this episode. Whoa. I think that's the first time we've gotten an age from one of the ladies, I feel like.
Yeah.
I was immediately turned on. I wrote, she's 40, turned on, thank you. But yeah, I think that's kind of most of that scene, right? Is that Edie's just like insulted, and then he's like, I don't want to marry you, I'm sorry.
He says, I don't want to marry you, and then she asks him to live
together.
Right.
Yeah.
So Edie really wants them to at least live together if he doesn't want to think about marriage.
He says, you know, no, because he just took over Mike's lease from Old Lady Sims, who we've never heard before, who owns this property. But I think I love when shows do this, where they just say, they drop words like Old Lady Sims and act like it's something that's been here since the first episode. Yep. It's like, you know Old Lady Sims, right? I got this property from her. So Carlos just took over the lease, and he says it's a huge commitment, so he doesn't want to break that lease right now. Which, honestly, here's the thing, if this was a normal relationship in a normal world and not the soap opera world of Desperate Housewives, I think that would be a great compromise, to be like, I have a year-long lease, we live next door to each other, let's keep doing this thing, and at the end of my lease then I'll move in. Like it gives you, like, a good buffer to keep working on your relationship, and then also gives you an end date to be like, I'm gonna move in when this happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's not how Desperate Housewives works.
No. And so Edie is going to rectify that.
She makes it really hard to stand sometimes.
I made that that little meme last week, did not know how relevant it was just gonna keep being.
For the audience who is not following our Twitter, which you should, at Wisteria Gaze, Ned made a great photo of Edie that says, what does it say?
It says, she's full of red flags, but luckily red is my favorite color.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, she's being insanely bad in this episode. I do love her, but she does make it hard to stand sometimes when she does shit like this.
And she visits old woman.
Sims. She invented the Sims.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's the inventor of The Sims, and she also owns a house on Wisteria Lane.
Edie is out to lunch with old woman Sims, and she starts talking about Carlos because Sims kind of mentions that she has a new tenant. She mentions Carlos's name, and Edie says, oh, I hope he still doesn't have that huge drinking problem where he gets really violent and is awful and tears and destroys things up.
And his heroin addiction and all those sex workers he has coming to the house. Like, just all these, like, wildly, obviously fake things that old lady Sims immediately believes.
Mm-hmm. I loved the line, I will say. Old lady Sims, she goes, I'm gonna tear up the lease right now. And then Edie goes, no, I can't let you do that. Not with your arthritis.
That was a very good line. There was another really good Edie line later when her and Lynette are together. When she's like, Gabby is the most manipulative person I've ever met. And then Lynette goes, did you hear that Carlos just got evicted? She goes, oh yeah, super sad. Anyway, like, like that was such a funny fucking line. Edie is just so funny, and I feel like they don't use how funny she is enough.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I feel that way about all of them. Like, Gabby is so funny when they let her be funny. So it's like they're all so funny, and I wish that they made more comedy moments. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's such a good line. Can I tell you, you want a little hint for season 4?
Please.
Old Lady Sims will be returning.
What?
Yeah. I forget if she's in the flesh, but she is like a moderately, like, she's a character who is moderately important because she is tied to season 4 in an important way.
Can I guess?
Sure.
Her daughter comes to the lane.
Close, I think, actually.
Oh, cool. Her niece?
I forget. But the new housewife is related to her.
Yay! Yeah.
So it's not like a huge spoiler, but like we're going to get a new housewife next season. I feel like Orson was kind of our new housewife, quote unquote, this season. And so next season we are getting a new housewife. And I believe she's, if I'm remembering correctly, fans who watched past me, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they are related. Old Lady Sims is like somewhat connected to season 4.
Ooh.
They're setting it up, baby. They're setting up these storylines.
We cut to Gabby going up to Susan, offering her some, what I called in my notes as condolenceulations, because she offers condolences for the wedding being called off with Ian, and then Susan says, oh, actually, it's back on with Mike, and then instantly Gabby goes, oh, yes, congratulations!
Gabby is, like, 3 episodes behind on Desperate Housewives. Like, mm-hmm. she hasn't caught up, and she's on an old storyline.
I know.
I wonder, it actually made me laugh, because she has been at Victor's place so much that I'm sure she is behind on, like, what's going on with her fucking friends because, like, she's never around.
Yeah.
And I actually found it kind of weird that this episode she seems to be staying at her house a bunch when I thought she lived at the mayor's house. I don't know what's going on with Gabby.
Well, I think it makes sense a little bit for her to be at her house a bit more this episode because the last episode, Victor was pretty rough with her.
That's true.
So
That's
I think
true.
It's maybe just, like, she is spending a little bit more time because we'll see in a couple scenes, like, there are some doubts.
Yeah.
We basically find out through this scene that Gabby, because Victor wanted to get married pretty much right away, they planned their wedding for the day Susan's wedding was going to be because it was canceled originally.
Which makes no sense to me, but you need that drama. The more Gabby explained it, the more I kind of got it of like, okay, I guess you know everyone's free that day and the vendors are available. But I definitely think it gets one-upped in the next scene when we find out that she's basically taken the entire wedding, which is wild to me. And not to jump to it, but it's because of commercial cuts. If you're watching without commercials, it just goes straight into the next thing, which is wild. I did love Mike trying to mediate. I thought it was great. Like, once again, he's just so calm and supportive. And he's like, yeah, we'll find some other shit. Cool. Thank you. We'll find another day. Like, he just doesn't, like, I love him reeling Susan in. I thought was good. And as I said, like, we pretty quickly go into the next scene where Susan goes to, like, apologize for overreacting. And I think the florist is there, and that's how she sort of realizes, oh my God, she's taking all my vendors too, which is wild. That's kind of cold, like taking even the designs Susan worked on for her wedding.
Yeah, you can't just straight up do that. At least ask for a different arrangement, like, if they can do it, you know?
But also, Susan, take $10K. Take the $10,000. Why is she turning down $10,000?
Truly.
What is wrong with her? Take Gabby's dirty money, please.
But she refuses, and she refuses to go to the wedding, and she takes the flower vase, and she just throws it on the ground to trash those flowers. Oh, I really loved the kind of button on the scene of her throwing the vase and then being like, these are my flowers, and then she just picks up a handful and runs out.
It's very good. Susan was funny this episode for me.
And then after that, we go to Carlos and Edie again. And we find out that Carlos has 24 hours to move out of the house.
Got evicted.
Yeah. So he asks Edie if he can crash with her. And he also asks if she had anything to do with it, because she is an evil mastermind manipulator.
You know, Edie always plays it kind of obvious to me. Mm-hmm. But, like, Carlos, like, you know, like, oh, something happened to you? Like, she does that to everybody. But Carlos is the first, I'm actually impressed he's, like, the first person to call her out on it. Like, he's the first person to notice it, I guess. And I was like, I can't tell if that means they're good for each other or horrific for each other. That, like, he's really the first person to kind of notice her bullshit and, like, call her out on it. He's like, you obviously have something to do with this. Because the timing, like, it's, I don't know, I feel like it's so interesting to me. Because kooky stuff happens in this show so much, and it's never really acknowledged. And so it is weirdly fourth wall breaking to me for Carlos to be like, I said I signed a lease, you go off somewhere, and now my lease is canceled. Like him like actively putting the obvious steps together, I just thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I feel like he's so used to hijinks as well, living with Gabby, that he's just like, what is it about these women on this lane?
He definitely has a type, I would say. Yes.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, my kingdom for more Gabby Edie content.
Through this scene,
she's late.
She's late, but also we find out, he says that, he says, I'm not in love with you.
He does. Sorry, I referenced Austin Powers and I made myself laugh. I'm so sorry.
Please tell me your Austin Powers reference.
It was I think it's in Austin Powers 2. I think when after Dr. Evil and Frau have sex, where it's one of the funniest scenes ever to me, when he's like one for me and one for my homies, and they like have sex, and then the very next morning he's like, did you try the Hot Pockets? They're divine. And then she walks up and she goes, I'm late, doctor. And he goes, what? And she goes, I'm late. I'm sorry I'm like this. I host an Austin Powers podcast. Everyone go listen to it. But yeah, this has nothing to do with Desperate Housewives other than Edie being like, I'm late.
I love that.
Anyway, I'm going to leave now. I'm going to leave the podcast forever.
Yay,
I'm
so finally, sorry. finally. New host.
I thought this was a ploy. I was convinced this was another ploy. But then by the end of it, it came out negative, and I went, okay, so it's not a ploy. Edie's tricking me. She's a tricky, tricky, tricky gal, because I was convinced she had, like, stolen pregnant lady piss and had it in the bathroom and was going to fake a pregnancy test, but she didn't do that.
No, but she's getting other ideas.
That is true.
Because as they're waiting for the pregnancy test to give them a result, they start talking about, like, having this kid. Carlos starts talking about how he will be there for her no matter what, because that's the guy he is. And then he starts talking about the nursery, and he gets really into it, and he starts getting excited about having a son, and then it's negative.
I genuinely did. That actually shocked me. Like, I genuinely thought Edie was going to fake a positive and yeah. loop him into a marriage or something with a baby, which still seems like it could be on the table, maybe, question mark.
Because her face was very mischievous. Yeah. I was very worried. I was like, please, Edie, don't pull a Carlos. And stop taking, like you know how Carlos literally fucked with Gabby's birth control pills?
Yeah.
He's gonna have the same shit done to him. How do you like it, Carlos? Sorry.
That is wild. Well, I don't know how he likes it, but... I forget how this scene ends. I just wrote it's negative, and then I cut to the next scene.
Yeah, it just, like, yeah, it just ends.
I think he's just, like, yeah, it's just, like, goodbye. Because we cut to Tom, who, you know, is a fucking idiot, and secretly brings a marriage counselor and old friend to the pizza place and basically tries to get Lynette to, like, slyly do couples counseling. And it obviously doesn't work, because why would you share your personal details with a stranger unless they are your therapist and you're aware of that? This was just such an uncomfy scene. She looked so uncomfortable, and he was trying so hard, and it just... Dude, lying to her to get her into a counseling room is not the way to get her to talk to you. It's just going to make her not want to talk to you more.
Yeah, and she...
It's just stupid.
She catches on, basically, like, right away.
Yeah.
And she's like, what the fuck is going on here?
And then she just kind of storms off. Because obviously that wasn't going to fucking work. And then we get this small little scene that I kind of mentioned earlier with the Lynette and Edie moment. That's very funny. But Susan is in the gazebo venting to Edie and Lynette. We haven't had a girl scene in a hot second. You know I love a scene where the girls are just talking. And I wish we had more of these scenes. Edie and Lynette, a duo I did not know I needed. But basically, Susan's venting about Gabby and is trying to get affirmation from her friends. Edie is on Susan's side as a rarity and is like, she's a manipulative bitch. And it's like, okay, pot kettle. All right. And Lynette is like, you're overacting a little bit. Like, I don't think she did it intentionally. And like, Lynette's definitely trying to be devil's advocate. And that's kind of it. I think I just kind of wrote that, like, I miss the girls. Mm-hmm. I miss the ladies hanging. And this also was a moment where I thought I miss Bree. I just miss... Yeah. I felt her absence in this episode in a way that, like, I miss... I need her back. I miss Bree.
I miss Bree. But I will say, I am enjoying the storylines being a bit more condensed.
That's true.
I feel like things are a bit easier to juggle with just the women we are focusing on right now. But I don't get me wrong, I cannot wait for the day that Bree is back. But right now, I like the little break. I like a mix-up sometimes.
But also, I miss having a mystery, you know what I mean? I'm excited for season four. I want Bree, I want a mystery, I want it all.
They're setting up so much for season four.
They are. By the end of this episode, there's some big shit being set up.
Oh, yeah.
And we cut to, I'm going to say it, this has been a light load season.
Yeah.
Is this the gayest scene we've had all season? This next sequence?
Yes.
Because I was slamming the load button on my computer.
So was
I. The whole time. This next sequence. Load city, baby.
This next sequence. Gabby, Susan, drunk, hanging out. They get so excited about having each other, being engaged with each other. They want to have a dual wedding. They're drunk. They're just hanging out. And yeah, they're like, we should have a dual wedding.
Like the ending of fucking Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Just like full on double wedding. I'm sorry. I screamed when Gabby said, your place or mine. Load, 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 load. The girls get drunk. They eat the chocolate. They're both kind of nervous about their bows. Are they right? And then, I'm sorry, when Susan is laying her head in Gabby's lap and Gabby's holding her face and is like, we should do this. And I think that Susan calls Gabby an incredibly attractive woman or something.
Yeah.
And then Gabby says, if I was a lesbian, I would totally do you or something. Mm-hmm. And I was fucking screaming at the top of my goddamn lungs.
Do we want to call it for this scene already?
There's nothing else. There's nothing else that's as loady as this scene.
Can I want to tell you something that I didn't think of until just now?
Tell me right now.
I wish we had like a gavel that like when we name the load, yeah, we can like tap the gavel.
We should get a gavel. We should get a gavel on set.
Yeah. I have this sound machine.
Okay.
That my mom got me from a dollar store for Christmas. I can play a sound from that.
Please, yeah, give me a sound. What's the sound effect?
Do you want me to play a random one or do you want me to...
Give me a surprise.
Give me a letter.
F. Oh, that's too easy. I as soon as I said F, I was like, oh, fart. It's just right there. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to iCarly. Yeah, Loat.
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 This is the best Loat we've had in ages. I'm going to say it. This is a good Loat.
I disagree. I like my Burks.
The Burks were like season one, weren't they?
They're still my favorite.
That's a long time ago. I meant like this season. I feel like this season we've been lacking. Oh, jinkies. Well, I have a question.
Please.
Why are they convinced that a drunken verbal agreement is like a signed paper contract?
I don't know.
The stakes for that felt so stupid.
It felt so stupid, and the next scene frustrated me so much.
Bring it. Tell me about Mackenzie. It. Talk to me about it.
The next scene is the women waking up from their drunken nights and realizing they don't want to have a double wedding.
Then just, it's not official. Y'all are both drunk. I do not understand what this is.
But also, like, I was really into the idea of having a little double lane wedding.
Oh, you wanted to do it. You were like,
I did.
Ready.
I thought it was going to be really fun.
I definitely never thought it would work out because they're both so different. You know what I mean?
I am a person who has seen the movie Bride Wars, so I know it's possible.
Oh my god. I had a poster for that on my fucking wall.
Everybody did.
Well, sadly, we won't get that double wedding you oh so yearned for, because they... It's funny, I thought Mike was great, because he's like, oh yeah, just blame me, just say I don't want it. But Victor genuinely doesn't want it. Victor's genuinely like, I'm not getting married next to an ex-con. He's an asshole. I can't believe I ever liked him.
Well, it's because they weren't giving us the full picture, you know? Now that we know him, we don't like him.
We're seeing the cracks, baby. We're seeing the cracks in the facade.
Oh, I want to give him a crack in the facade.
Hey. Victor says he'll pay for Susan and Mike's wedding. And once again, I'm going to need Susan to accept some money from these rich people.
Yeah.
Because I am stressed by how many times she's been offered like $10,000 this episode and has not. I mean, I guess she didn't know about this time, but you know what I mean? Like, I would love it if this rich man wanted to just give me a bunch of money. I'd be like, all right, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, and when Gabby and Susan kind of talk to each other, Susan says that Mike doesn't want the wedding. Gabby, or they talk about, like, their doubts that they had, and Susan tells Gabby, any doubts I previously had, they're gone. They're 100% gone. Yours too, right? And then Gabby goes, yes, Susan. Just like me.
Looks like a haunted Victorian child. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I have some more gruel, Susan?
I really like, again, Mike just brings out the best in Susan a lot sometimes. And I do like that. Like, I loved the scene of her realizing she has a partner that can, like, take the blame and can help stand by her. And I did, like, I don't know. Maybe it was even just the delivery Terry Hatcher had in this moment. I really loved when her was like, yeah, we're just going to get married in the fall and it'll be great. Like,
yeah,
she's chill. She's so chill. like Mike just really tampers her kookiness a lot in a good way. I don't know. I know that she's been annoying lately, but I was just into Susan this ep. I was into Susan and Mike.
Yes.
Finally. Finally the Susan stans get to eat.
I hope Mike doesn't die one day. I feel like
he's
going
to. We all will die one day.
I know, but I just feel like
we're actively dying.
This feels like, to me, even if, like it just feels like...
He dies next episode.
He does next episode, yeah. At the minute they get married. I just feel like this love is being built up a lot. I just know that this is me thinking of, like, oh, there's a lot of seasons of this soap opera, you know? And this is a love that's been being built up a lot, and it is very sweet. And I would hate for it to end, which is why I feel like it will.
Soon? Or, like, when are you predicting?
I mean, I feel like I said this in, like, episode, like, two or three of the whole show. But I'm like, Mike and Susan will fall in love, get married, have a kid, and then he will die. So they'll at least have a Mikey Jr. And
Mikey Jr.
They'll have an MJ. Yeah.
Like me.
Yeah, like you.
I don't think anyone knows. My middle name is Jordan, so my mom calls me MJ, and so does Ned sometimes.
Sorry to distract again.
You're so good. And then after the double wedding gets canceled and our dreams are dashed, we cut to Carlos. He's staying with Edie while he looks for new apartments. He's kind of just reading out some of the apartments he's checking out. And Edie is like, hey, instead of looking for apartments, I have a really reasonable idea. What if you lived with me, like you didn't want to do, and we have a child together? Like, jumps from 0 to 100 out of nowhere. And here's the thing. I feel kooky because the way she explained it actually made sense to me as I was listening to it, where she was like, there are two people of a certain age who, like, want to have a kid, and, like, they don't have to be together, but they can, like, I loved her line when she was like, we both desperately need to love something, and I don't see why it has to be each other. Maybe we could just both love this baby. And I do think she's being manipulative. I do think she's, and obviously we find out by the end of the episode, right, she's gonna be Kate taking her birth control and just using it to, like, have sex and be with Carlos and not actually have a child with him. But in this moment, I did believe her. She is a queen of manipulation. I was like, shit, God, she really wants a kid. And I actually thought that, like, it might not, like, I don't know if I trust Desperate Housewives to write it well, but, like, I think an interesting plot line would be two people who are platonic who want to just, like, have a kid and are of a certain age. Like, it could be a cool storyline. I don't think they're going to do it, but it could be.
Yeah.
How do you feel about all this crazy stuff?
I feel like it could be cool. Two, I feel like just because we got, like, a specific age from Edie this episode makes me think of, like, what if she's going through menopause?
I feel like this is so rude. Earlier when she was like, I'm late, I genuinely was in my brain like, wouldn't they be, like, menopausal at this point, kind of? But I can't tell if that's rude, because I feel like 50s is more menopausal time, but some women hit menopause early. My mom did, like, yeah. I earlier when she said I'm late, I also was like, is she menopausal? Like, I kind of thought that when she said I'm late, honestly.
It's definitely just more difficult, I think, to get pregnant as you get older, but, like, I think, like, my mom had me when she was in her 40s, you know? But that is just, like, something that did go through my mind, like, even if she is being this manipulative, because, plot twist, she's not taking her birth control. Or no, they discuss that.
She is, yeah. Well, she's like, I'm gonna go get rid of my birth control, but then later we see her taking birth control. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, she's not actually trying to get pregnant.
Yeah, she's just trying to trap him into the relationship. It would be interesting if the plot line, I guess, was, like, they did want to co-parent this child, and then it's like, what happens when it can't happen?
Yeah, I'm interested to see where it's gonna go. I am wondering if they're gonna pull some bullshit of Carlos being like, you betrayed me about the birth control, when it's like, you've tampered with your ex-wife's birth control. Like, once again, like, it's, you know, I'm not saying it's right, but no, saying you've pulled this bullshit in similar ways before, so it's like, maybe you two are right for each other because you're both fucking assholes sometimes. I think Carlos has definitely changed a lot. Like, Carlos has improved as a character tenfold for me. Like, he is at a point where I would say I like Carlos. Like, he's generally chill. He's respectful. He's not, like, creepy and abusive anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm curious where they're going to go. I don't know where it's going to land. And then we skipped around a little bit, but this is a little moment where we see Gabby and Susan call off the double wedding. It's whatever, you know, we talked about it already. And then we get this, like, teeny tiny scene of where, as we said, we get the confirmation that Edie is still taking her birth control. I did write down, I'm a simple man. Edie says, let's make a baby, and I love it. So she's hot to me. But yeah, it's just two itty-bitty scenes that we already kind of touched on. But those happen here before we dive into the next big scene.
Yes, the next big scene is Tom and Lynette, and we kind of get a blowout.
Yeah.
Tom is like, let's fuck. You won't talk to me. Let's have sex. And Lynette, fine, let's do it. And
this was scary.
Yeah. And he starts getting freaked out. And he's like, okay, stop. Actually, like, get off of me. Just talk to me. Like, what the fuck is going on?
I was like, I know that Lynette wouldn't, in theory, but I was like scared Lynette was gonna like do something. I was like, yeah. I don't know. They've showed men being raped on the show before, and so I was like genuinely kind of worried Lynette was gonna go a little too far. But then, like, yeah, he grabs her wrists in a really hard way that was also scary. Like, they were both kind of being very violent towards each other. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is just a very scary scene.
It was. He ends up like pushing her off of him, and she falls off the bed and hits her head on the nightstand.
That got a real life gasp out of me.
So did I. And can I tell you?
Please tell me.
The living room was full. Not only was Cody in this room, but our roommate was as well. And they both went, Jesus.
I was watching by myself this morning and like was taking a note that happened. And I heard the noise of like the table like hitting her head. And I like was like, it got a real visceral reaction from me. And I think it's so funny because I feel like we joke and make fun of this show a lot. But when push comes to shove, this show gets visceral body reactions out of me sometimes.
People get stabbed.
Even though this show can be really silly and this was like a scary scene, the acting is amazing in it. And I think the acting in the final scenes with Tom and Lynette is also amazing. Like, both of these actors are killing it. And so, I don't know. I love when the show sometimes gets into these darker places and like takes them serious. It's cool. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think we cut to the hospital quickly, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Next scene, we're at the hospital. Tom and Lynette are waiting for some results of a CAT scan. And they're talking about Rick again. And Tom asks if she had feelings for Rick. And she just says, I'd never cheat. And he says, that's not what I asked.
Yeah. But that's an answer right there.
Yeah.
And he's like, did you fall in love with him? And she just starts crying. And then he starts crying. And I was like, oh my fucking God.
And then they get called into the doctor's office. And she has nodes in her neck. And it could be lymphoma. Mm-hmm. And as the doctor is telling them about this, the noise kind of drowns out as he's just doing clinical speak. And we kind of like pan down to Tom and Lynette's side of like their hands just next to each other. And then they slowly, Tom grabs her hand, hold hands. And then we start to get our Mary Alice monologue.
Yeah, Mary Alice comes in again and talks about questions, how some questions are harder to answer because we are afraid of what the answer might be. We see Lynette tucking in Parker, and her question is, will I be around to watch my children grow up? We see Gabby looking at Victor, and the question is, am I making a mistake marrying this man? We see Edie looking at Carlos, and her question is, will he ever truly love me? And then we see the person who asked herself the hardest question and got the answer she wanted with Susan, finally realizing Mike is the one for her. And when we ask those hard questions and we get the answer we want, that's where the happiness begins. And that's the end of the episode. I love how they're like, Lynette, you didn't cheat, but we're still going to punish you with a possible cancer diagnosis.
They're like,
what a hard turn. What a hard fucking turn.
Hard turn. Hard turn. I feel like she is going to have lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is like a setup for a season 4 Lynette is Sick storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested if Desperate Housewives is going to drop the Rick stuff or if it's going to be, we have to deal with that with this now. Because I feel like the hand holding, sometimes on Desperate Housewives, they like to just do an easy fix for things.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that like this is a fix for that, but it's like it's like a way to bring them together again.
Earlier in that scene, right when they're in the waiting room, Tom refuses to hold her hand. It's like this big turn of when he then takes her hand. And I think that's true with anybody that like some shit's bigger than the petty shit. And not that like cheating is petty, but like her possibly having cancer is always going to be way more important than the time she didn't cheat. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, I agree. I wonder if they're going to keep it going or if they're just going to say, like, they don't care about that anymore because this illness takes precedence over that.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Who knows? Not I.
Not I.
Surely not I.
Not me. Anyway, and that's the end of the epi.
Next week is the finale, the season finale of season 3, baby.
And then we are doing a recap.
Oh, shit. I forgot.
We gotta do a recap after that.
We have spread this season over so long that I, like, do not remember where the beginning of the season even was.
We're Riverdale at this point, baby.
Oh, my God. This season was Orson and the Monique stuff. I have fully forgotten about that. I have really bad memory. Well, we'll do it. We'll do a little recap, and then we will dive into season 4. I am so fucking excited to dive into season 4.
We genuinely took a long enough break.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's just do it. I remember my original watch, which was now a hot second ago. I really liked season 4, so I'm interested to rewatch it. Actress I really love is going to be on it. The love of my life, Dana Delaney. I'm very excited for Dana Delaney to be here. I'm pumped. Guess who else is going to be in season 4?
Danny DeVito.
I fucking wish. No, Nathan Fillion.
Oh my God.
Isn't that weird? Isn't that so weird that Nathan Fillion's going to be in season 4?
He's in everything.
He is, but also in everything.
He's one of those guys.
He's one of those guys. Season 4 is going to be a blast. But first, we gotta round out season 3. But until then, until next week, until we do that rounding up, we have been Wisteria Gaze. So if you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at WisteriaGaze_, or on Twitter at WisteriaGaze, where you can send us messages. You can say hi. We're around over there. We post some fun stuff. And you can also find more information about us and about the episodes and about everything on our website, wisteria.gay.
And on wisteria.gay, you can also find links to our merch, our Discord, and our Patreon. Our Patreon is great. It helps support us and the show. We love our patrons and only our patrons.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Screw my fiance. I only love these fucking patrons.
Yeah.
I love you all.
I love you. Give me a big kiss if that's okay.
So if you're not a patron, you don't get that. No. Only the patrons listening get that.
I hope you muted. And I hope you're back now. I hope you instinctively knew. You get benefits if you are our patron. We have a minimum of $2 a month. And with that patronage, you get ad-free episodes, episode show notes. You get, we're going to do a movie watch.
Bonus movie episodes, yeah.
Yes. And you also get episode shout-outs. So we are going to take the next minute to shout out our patrons. So thank you, Amanda.
Annie.
Aubrey.
Kaylin.
Cheryl.
Drusilla LaFay.
Elise.
Aaron.
Helena.
Jade.
Kim.
Lisa.
Liv.
Lydia.
Mac.
New patron.
Oh, yeah.
Nadia.
Sarah Schroeder.
Sarah Swihart.
Susan.
Tom.
Victoria.
And Vincent.
Thank you so much for being our patrons. We love you.
We love you so much.
Oh, yeah.
We give you little kissies before bed because we love you.
We took you in. Breakfast in bed. You know what I love, Mackenzie? You know what I love?
Tell me.
Reviews.
Oh.
I love reviews so much that I asked, specifically iTunes, to make sure that whenever people leave reviews on our podcast, more people can find it.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, they did it specifically for us. So everybody, please go write a review. It makes our day. And it helps people find the show, like I just said. And at the end of every episode, we like posing a question to get those reduces flowing. That's review juices. And what should our question be this week? Our question is,
what Wisteria Lane double wedding are you going to be a part of? So it's you're marrying somebody, but then who are you being married beside as well in your double wedding?
Okay, who are you being married beside?
I think obviously I'm marrying Edie. I feel like I've got to stay consistent.
Yeah.
But I think the person I'm being married with, I think, is I'm going to I think Bree is going to come back. She's going to break up with Orson, and she's going to go... and at this point, maybe Gabby and Victor have broken up. And Brie is like, look, I was on my honeymoon and I've done a lot of thinking. And I think that I'm actually in love with Gabby because of that one scene where we were making really like look cute eyes at each other in season two. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to go, Brie, I'm about to get married to Edie. If you want to expedite this process, just hop onto this wedding. So then I'm going to marry Edie and Brie is going to marry Gabby. And we're going to get married side by side. Okay. In the middle of the lane. We're going to do like a lane wedding. You know how they like cleared the street and they put the Christmas thing up? We're going to do that, but with a wedding.
Ooh, nice.
So yeah, that's my double wedding I'm a part of.
I'm going to be marrying Andrew.
Yes.
Because I also like, I'm intrigued to see how Andrew's going to be as like an adult.
I miss him. Where the fuck has he been? Yeah. Is he just at the house chilling? Probably. Like, where is he?
He's on the honeymoon. and I think I would be getting married side by side. Ida is there. I'm getting married beside her.
You two aren't getting married, though.
No. We broke up, remember?
I do remember that, yeah. But I didn't realize that you were like on good terms enough to get married.
We're same on wedding as her. Such good terms, and we kind of have to be, because in my double Wisteria Lane wedding, she's getting married to you, Mackenzie.
Oh my gosh, I stole your woman.
But it's all okay. Like, we had a brawl, like Bridget Jones style.
Oh,
about like
yes.
One. So, yeah.
Yeah, is that, I believe in a thing called love outside the Greek restaurant. Amazing. Amazing movie.
So, yes, you're getting married to Ida. We've cleared the air about it all. She's got her, is it H-strap Ida?
Her cat. Oh, her eight strap and her cat, yeah.
And her cat. And that is my double wedding, my double gay wedding.
So when you leave us a review, let us know what your Wisteria Lane double wedding is, who you're marrying, who you're getting married next to. And also just like, you know, or you can just say like, hey, I love this podcast and I love these people. And yeah. And that's also good. Assuming you do love us. I mean, I don't know. If you hate us, then don't leave a review. Please don't.
Please don't.
Also, like,
please.
What are you doing in season 3, episode 22 if you hate us? But
they really, hey. They're passionate about it.
They're like, I hate these people, but I gotta listen to them every week.
I gotta
What's
know what happens
on?
Next.
I gotta know. I can't watch this show on my own.
They're invested
I
in
hate
the...
these fucking assholes.
They're invested in the question lore at this point that we've built. Yeah, yeah. If you want, you can follow me, Ned, on social media. It's out there.
I mean, don't follow me because I'm not there anymore, but you can say hi to me on The Desperate. Not Housewives. The Wisteria Gays. It's social medias.
At The Desperate Housewives Twitter account and say hello, Wisteria Gays.
Yeah,
and
just make them notice us.
Get it trending.
Make Senpai notice us. That is the official Desperate Housewives ABC account.
All right. Mackenzie.
Yes, Ned.
I love you.
I love you.
Everyone else out there, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.